All right, on This Week in Nothing Major, we're going to talk Qatar, Rio, and Andreeva's breakthrough in Dubai. The young 17-year-old having a huge week taking the title there. So with that, let's get into it. All right, everyone, welcome back to Nothing Major. I'm Sam Querrey. I got Jack Sock, Steve Johnson, John Isner, Charlie Fox, the team at SIFT. This is new for us. We are going to do Monday shows now. Monday shows and Friday shows. So the Monday shows are going to be kind of news from the previous week. So this Monday, the episode we're on right now, we're going to talk about Doha. We're going to talk about Rio. The women were in Dubai. So those are going to be kind of the Monday shows. Tennis-specific news, results, things like that. And our Friday shows are going to continue shows about whatever we want to talk about. We will hit some results occasionally, but those will be more interviews, fun topics, things that you guys are all used to. Give us a break. First Monday right here. Let us know what you guys think. You want to leave comments or anything. Let us know if you guys like this new format where we talk about news results Monday and then keep Friday the same. Or if you don't like it, tell us that too. But if you don't, if you do tell us that, we'll probably continue just doing what we're going to do on Mondays and Fridays. So with that, let's talk about the massive 500s. We had a 500 in Doha, a 500 in Rio. Rublev with the title in Doha takes out Jack Draper. Rublev has kind of been known as like the 500 king, I feel like, over the last 5 or 6 years. I believe that's his like sixth 500 that he's won. But he took out a stacked field in Doha. John, I want to start with you. Of the top eight seeds, 15 of them, or of the top eight seeds, all eight of them were top 15 in the world. So Rublev getting the title here. He's been a little quiet, I feel like, for the last 6 months. How did he play this week? Are you impressed with what you saw in Rublev?
Yeah, I am. I mean, like, to take the title on that field, crazy impressive. He won two really close matches, one over Demonauer and another one over Felix. I mean, those are, as you guys know, matches that just boost your confidence so much. When you win a six in the third in the Demonauer match, he had like 8 match points before he finally won it. Like that match could have very easily gone south for him, and then he might have could have still, you know, been in his rut, right? But no, he wins that match. He overcame that adversity. Then he won a close one against Felix, and then he won a three-set match, not as close as those other ones against Draper in the final. So huge week for Rublev. Sam, as you mentioned, the 500 king, his sixth 500 level title. Very impressive. So I think he's certainly back to his top 10 form after this week, and he's going to be a name going forward in the Dubai tournament, about to start right now, and Indian Wells Miami as someone that can make some serious noise in those events.
You mentioned Felix. Does anyone get more walkovers and buys than him? Two in this tournament. You remember last year in Madrid, he got like four on his way
to
the final.
That was insane.
Not saying he's not like a fantastic player, doesn't deserve where he's ranked, but my gosh. And like massive walkovers too. This is a quarter, a round of 16 and a quarter. Anyway, good job, Felix. Draper up to number 12 in the world. Jack, is Draper getting into the top 10 anytime in the next 6 months? Does he have that game?
I think so. I mean, he plays a massive game. Obviously, lefties are always tough to play. Guy serves cannons, hits the ball huge from the baseline. Seems to kind of have an all-court dynamic as well, comfortable moving in. I think when he's firing on all cylinders, I think he can compete with everybody out there pretty much. And if seems like he maybe has a little bit more of some up and down results as some of the guys ranked right around there. But I mean, yeah, I mean, if you're already 12 in the world, I mean, why not keep going and slide into the top 10 here by US Open or fall?
Jack, now this is a match I remember because I was watching you play. I think you were playing a challenger a long time ago. I think it was in California, and did you play Draper, right?
I did.
Do you remember this?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure did.
Okay, no. So my question for you.
Started my downfall, yeah.
No. He beat you, right? And he was super young. Did you think he was going to be this good at the time when you played him? Closing in on top 10 right now?
No, not when I played him. I wasn't at my best at that time. I thought, I don't even know how old he was at the time, but I'd heard about him a little bit before that, And but it was kind of the same as I just said. He had a lefty, so already just serving every ball to my backhand. We're playing in random, I don't know, Northern California. I thought his good moments during the match were very impressive, but I also feel like his it was kind of a roller coaster out there. It seemed like he was good for a few games and pretty at the time pretty shocking for a few games. Obviously, he's buttoned that all up and gotten much more physical, I think, as well. But I think he can only keep moving forward. He's clearly showing it now, month in and month out. So he got the better of me there in NorCal, and he went this way and I went this way. So
you're going this way in pickle.
Yeah,
you can get him in pickle. All right.
You can get him in pickle. take solace in that, Jack.
Yeah. All right, Stevie. Alcaraz loses to Laheka. Berrettini beats Novak. I got a double question. Is Novak not? I'm not saying done, but it just like seems like there's more cracks in the armor lately with him. And then Alcaraz, is this just what we're gonna get from him? Which is really good, but he doesn't quite have that standard that like Novak, Rafa, and Roger had, where they just don't have bad losses. Alcaraz still seems to throw some ups and downs in there. So let me start with Novak. Is he just struggling now? What's the deal with Novak?
I'm not sure what Novak's plan is going forward. Obviously, nobody knows it but him. I don't know why he is playing this tournament, just in general. It feels as if he just wants to win slams to continue to further his legacy and his stamp as, you know, the greatest champion of the sport that we've ever seen. There's obviously financial obligations, maybe commitments that he has made in the past, or, you know, we don't know exactly what it takes for him to play these types of events. It just feels as if he is not as motivated to win, you know, Dubai or Doha than he is to win a slam, which is rightfully so, because that's the only thing that can further his legacy. So, you know, good to see him out there playing. I thought we weren't going to see him till Indian Wells, maybe, and then, you know, just play kind of some of the Master Series, try and gear up, win the French, win Wimby, like those types of events. So a bit interesting to see him out there. It just sometimes feels as if he's a bit flat emotionally, which has usually never been the case for him. So, but, you know, he's earned the right to play whatever schedule he deserves and wants to do. So it's just interesting. And obviously it's a tough draw going against Berrettini, who played really well that match, the serve, the forehand, everything was going well. So it's just an interesting to watch Novak in these events, because, you know, the Doha title is not going to further his legacy. So I'm not sure what's his like emotional investment. And then on the other side for Alcaraz.
Yeah. Here's what I want to know. Alcaraz. I kind of want everyone's opinion. Is this just Alcaraz? Is this just what we're going to see for the next decade?
I think, at least for me, I feel as if we got very spoiled over the last 15, 20 years watching, you know, obviously Roger, Rafa, Novak, and then the Wawrinkas, Murrays, Del Potros, Berdiches, Tsongas, whatever. Like, when they get a lead, they close the door. And that we just haven't seen with conviction from Alcaraz over the last couple of years. Obviously, I believe that his top-end tennis is better than anyone when he is playing his best. But his mid-range everyday, you know, put on your hard hat, go to work, can fluctuate from time to time. And it showed, especially in this match, did a really good job, wasn't playing his best tennis, has a 4-2 lead in the third and break point to go up double break. And then about 7.5 minutes later, he's lost serve twice and the match is over, which is just something we haven't seen from those top guys. Like, when Roger got a lead, like, doors closed. Like, it's over. Rafa got a lead, it's over. So I just think his everyday game sometimes fluctuates too much for somebody that I think is, at when he is at his best, the best player in the world.
Is this what we're going to see from Alcaraz, or do you think he gets on par with like the big three and becomes one of those guys?
No, I don't think this is what we're going to see for the next 5 to 8 years. It's easy to forget that he's still only 21 years old. I mean, so like his best tennis is, you can argue, in all likelihood, his best tennis is like 5 years from now. So he hasn't even reached his peak. So yeah, he's still so young. He still has so much maturing to do, even though he's so ridiculously good. And is, you know, all these grand slams already at 21 years old. So no, I think he will shore that up and become more consistent. It's crazy to think that has not even come close to reaching his highest level as a consistent tennis player goes. So no, I don't think so. But, you know, maybe, you know, this year and a little bit next year, he might have some inconsistent results, some losses that make you scratch your head a little bit, like the one against Lehechka in Doha. But, no, I think he'll fix that. And, yeah. I think he'll be fine going forward. Obviously, he'll be fine, but I think we'll be a lot more.
I think he'll be just fine.
We're not talking about someone 75 in the world. No, he's going to be. I think he's going to get a lot more consistent the next 3, 4, 5 years, and we're going to see some sheer dominance out of it.
But for obviously John, like, you are the king of closing out matches. Like, that's a learned skill, right? Like, it's not just something you were born with. Like, that's something you cultivated over the course of your career. I mean, obviously, you had the best serve in the history of tennis, but like. No, but still, like, that's still like a learning curve that he has to go through that, you know, I think some of the top guys did, you know, early in their career as well. Like, it's just something that he's got to go through. But
I mean, it was a little different for me. I think if I was up a break in the third set or won the first set, up a break in the second set, it's different because I can just literally, the other person can't touch the ball at all. Like, they can't, I don't care how confident they are, they can't touch the ball. I think he can maybe take a page out of Roger's book, right? And someone who had an incredible serve, yes, but he wasn't getting free points left, right, and center on his serve. So he's the best front runner, I think, of all time, Roger Federer, no doubt. So Carlos, to me, still has so many levels to improve on his serve in particular. I think his patterns are predictable, especially on his second serve. I think guys can just really key in on where he's going on his second serve. And that's what Lehechka did on that match point. I mean, Carlos just sort of hit a vanilla second serve right up the middle. Obviously, it's a crunch time moment. You don't want to, you know, double fault, but Lehechka was dialed in on that and just ripped it back in return up the line for a winner. So his serve, that's something that his team is working on. It's going to continue to improve. It might have some ups and downs, but ultimately once he gets that shot to improve a few percent here and there, it's going to be lights out.
All right, let's move on to Rio. Diego Schwartzman, part two, Sebastian Baez with the title. Rio, it just, the field is so average. One guy in the top 20, it's Zverev. And, I mean, Musetti was in there, he pulled out, Rune pulled out. But, like, the difference between these two 500s is monumental. I mean, Baez's path to defend the title, he beat a guy ranked 137, 46, 125, 91, and 60. It almost seems unfair that Baez gets the same amount of points as Rublev. Jack, as one of two people who played Rio one time on this podcast. What do you think, like, these five, I guess what I'm getting at, like, I almost feel like, why don't more players go to Rio? It's weak every year, basically, right? You guys know that it's always like a pretty weak field. Are you surprised more top players don't actually go down to Rio just to take advantage of this, like, weak field in the 500s? Or is it just a grind to go to South America on clay with a bunch of hard courts?
I think it's more that than anything. I think, I just don't think guys probably want to make that travel all the way down there. As we felt, the conditions down there can also be brutal. There were some there were some rough days, heat, humidity. Probably, going to Doha or Dubai, just probably a much more comfortable overall tournament for these guys to go to. A lot of them probably train in Dubai at times and they're just more familiar with it. Yeah. Rio, I feel like it was a grind. We went down for 1 week basically. And there's a reason we didn't go back. If you're looking to pick up points and you're the Baezes of the world and these guys, and you can go, you know, potentially pick up 500 points. By all means. But I think, most guys I'd probably err on more comfortable, maybe even nicer 500 that week would just be my guess. I mean,
yeah, Zverev's a good example. He went down and lost quarterfinals of both events. Like, he's probably looking back on it now saying, like, what am I doing?
Yeah, but I'm going to defend the golden swing here. I'm going to defend it because, I mean, to me, these tournaments in the Middle East are like, the fields are loaded. Money has a lot to do with that. Obviously, there's a lot of money there in Doha. They're paying all these guys appearance fees. Novak Djokovic has this new sponsorship with Qatar Airways. It's probably why he was down there. But the South American swing is like is, to me, in Middle East, it seems stale. It's anything but in South America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wasn't ripping the South American swing, by the way. I would just mention
that. No, you weren't. You weren't. You're right. But I think as a watch, and I'm like dead serious, I'd rather watch the Rio 500 on TV with Baez versus, you know,
Cerundolo.
A Cerundolo, because the crowd is so into it, and it's night matches, and they love their sport down there. They love their tennis, as opposed to a match in Doha with Rublev and someone who's in the stadium's half full, and there's not that much energy going on in the stadium. So they love their tennis down there. I hope that swing stays there for a long time. There's some rumors that a Saudi Arabian 1000 could come into the calendar in February. What would that do to the South American swing? Who knows? But I've always said, I said this a couple years ago one time, but that South America, if anyone needs to get a Masters 1000 event, it should be somewhere in South America. That would be insane, and the atmosphere would be ridiculous. You have all the players down there playing on dirt, mandatory event. Like, obviously, the money's not there on the sponsorship side as much as it is in Saudi Arabia or the Middle East, but that would be a great watch, I think, for tennis fans.
Stevie, you agree with that take? Do you want do you think if there was a Masters series, a new one, take money aside, just like go on vibes, where do you want that Masters series? You want it in Chile?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like I the only time I've ever been down there is for Rio for the Olympics, and I never left the village. So like, I actually have no understanding like what South America and the events really look like. But what you talked about earlier, I think these draw discrepancies are only going to get worse. Now you're in the Middle East, you have Doha and Dubai, 2 500 events back-to-back weeks and with relative ease to get from one to the next. And if you look at the swing now, you have to go from Rio to Acapulco, which is an absolute bloodbath from like travel. And like, so Rio ends, if you do well in Rio, you know, you finish Saturday or Sunday, like you have to fly that night or the next night. And Acapulco is a Saturday final, so you have to play Monday or Tuesday, the day you fly in, the day after you fly in, new surface, new surroundings, all that stuff. So I just think the discrepancy is going to get worse and worse for these events, and like in Rio, just because the convenience factor is impossible.
We saw Acapulco switch to a hard court about a decade ago, and their player field is incredible. Every year, Acapulco's got a handful of top 10 players. I think the Rio tournament is actually trying to switch to a hard court event, according to them. I think that
they've made pushes for that.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. You know, they've got such a history of being a clay court event. Do you think if Rio went to a hard court event, the field would improve as to what it is now, or do you think it still kind of stays the same?
I think it improves, but for guys just to play Rio and, you know, Acapulco back to back, I don't think, you know, guys are going to go from BA to, you know, 250 clay to 500 hard to 250 clay back in Santiago. So like, you know, the top names, I think there's a lot of guys that will do it who get in, you know, those clay guys that want to play on clay, but that field is going to get it's tricky. And Sasha, as you can see, you know, Musetti, who pulled out, would not even have been seeded in Doha at 16. Like, and he was the second seed in the tournament. So that just kind of shows you the strength of field in that regard.
Yeah, but I think if Rio went to hard court, I mean, that's the you know, the main event down there in the clay court swing. So if they go to hard, then you might as well not make any of the tournaments clay at that point.
Correct.
You're just going to have some rinky-dink 250. So, another thing, it's ridiculously hot in Rio, as Jack and I know, like absurd. And as all of us know, Acapulco, I would say Rio's the number one hottest tournament all year. Rio. It's not Australia.
Your sample size is one. You've been one time.
Dude, every single year it's that. It's like Casper Ruud posted something. It was like 37 degrees. Thank you.
It was so hot.
And Acapulco is ridiculous as well.
Yeah. Like you watch these guys 2.5 games in, like their shorts are dripping.
Yeah. Could you imagine, Jack, like you playing that tournament every year? Like,
they wouldn't even have to water the courts. They would just let Jack walk around. It would just be moisture for them.
I could just do a light jog around the course and get a little sprinkle out there.
Save on water.
Let's touch on a little WTA. Every now and then we'll sprinkle it in because we're not overly familiar with it as we are on the WTA. But Andreeva claims the title in Dubai. She's 17 years old. Let me first start with saying Iga, Coco, and Sabalenka titleists so far in 2025, although we haven't had a lot of titles. But Andreeva, youngest ever WTA 1000 champ, now ranked world number 9. Stevie J, is she going to get herself in the mix with Iga, Coco, and Sabalenka? You think we're going to be talking about her soon as like one of those girls that's going to be winning, slam, like some slams coming up?
She has the capabilities as a tennis player. You know, she's had some great results. Obviously, this is an incredible week for her over there in the Middle East, you know, capturing her first WTA 1000 title and, you know, being, you know, the youngest to do it, or second youngest or whatever it was, other than Sharapova. But it's more of a miss on the behalf of the top women of the game. Sabalenka had a couple of tough weeks. Coco had a couple of tough weeks. Iga had a couple of tough weeks, which is surprising because they have been rock solid from start to finish over the course of the last, you know, couple of years. Obviously, we know Iga is pretty much unbeatable on clay, and Sabalenka has kind of taken up all the hardcore tournaments, but they didn't play great over there, which is, it's early in the season. There's a lot going on, but, you know, it's impressive to see her get that done, you know, as a 17-year-old to overcome, you know, and in the final, she's playing Clara Towson, who is, you know, ranked below her. So that's a lot of pressure to be the higher ranked person to win your first WTA 1000 title. So kudos to her. And I think there's big things for her in the future.
All right, we got a little housekeeping. Our hot guy results are from round one are out. Usually this would be like a Friday thing, but because we're doing it every other day, just a little update. No major updates. Tommy Paul wins easy. Rude wins easy. Draper easy. The only upset we had was Musetti over Arthur Fils, and that was like a 9-8. So that wasn't like a massive upset. Berrettini rolls Shelton with a battle over Fucsovich, 51-49. We knew that was going to be a battle. A couple studs there. But the next round of voting is today. So go on there and vote. I'm trying to think. Any other Berrettini versus Shelton? I guess probably the biggest quarter is Fritz versus Dimitrov. I think that one is going to be... I think that could go either way. I think Dimitrov clips him, but we will find out later today. and update everyone. All right, before we're done here, we got two big events this week, two more 500s, Acapulco and Dubai. I want to go to John. I want you to predict the Dubai champion, and we'll see next Monday. We'll see if you're right. Just the champion.
I'll go Rublev.
Back to back.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. That's a terrible pick. let's go to Jack. Give me the Acapulco champion.
I'm going to go with fellow American Tommy Paul down there. I think physically he's going to have no issues. I think we all know that. I think his confidence is probably as high as ever. The guy, he's just really, really good at tennis. I like his draw as well. I think we're going to have a Tommy Paul and Zverev final, and I think Tommy's gonna clip him in the final.
All right. Well, I'm excited for next Monday to see if either of you guys are right on those takes.
Come on, TP.
We're always cheering for TP. All right, that's it. We got a Friday. That's the Monday show. Friday show coming out. On the Friday show, we got Stevie's DMs. As you know, he lost the big pickleball match. He's got to DM the five people that we discussed. We're still crushing the Hawkeye segment, and we got mailbag. We're going to answer a lot of fan questions. Going to be fun. We might even dip into my own magical run from Acapulco 2017. Who knows?
Oh, let's do that.
Yeah, that'd be nice for everyone, wouldn't it?
All right, forget I made a doubles final that year, Sam.
Yeah. You also had a run to the doubles final. That's right.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for the Monday show. Let us know what you guys think. Rate it, review. We are we're on YouTube. We're on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Also ahead, submit your mailbag questions. A lot of times we pull from YouTube the questions, but you can also send us DMs at Nothing Major Show. And that's it. We'll see you guys Friday.